Cameras are rolling? Yep. All right. Make sure you keep a timer on them and everything. Oh, man.
Sorry.
Yeah. That hurt. All right. Here we go. Welcome to the Rod of Iron Podcast, Fundamental Baptist, breaking down discussions, dogma, and daily events. I'm your host, Pastor Bruce Mejia, here from First Works Baptist Church in beautiful Southern California, Anaheim Hills. This is season 3, and we got a special guest with us for this season. Pastor Stephen L. Anderson from Faithful Word Baptist Church in Tempe, Arizona, is with us for this episode. How you doing, Pastor?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me out.
You excited to be here?
Yep.
It's a blessing. Pastor Anderson is not only my sending pastor, but he's also a very good friend of mine. He's my mentor, and I'm looking forward to our discussion this episode. We're going to talk about just a couple different things, and the truth is we might not even hit on all these subjects, but for sure we're going to talk about a little bit about exercise, health, maybe some time management, shoot the breeze a little bit, and so looking forward to a really exciting episode. All right, folks, you ready, Pastor Anderson?
Let's do it.
Here we go. Dun 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 dun.
Joke. When we were in Arizona, they were just roasting me about landmarks. Like,
yeah,
the whole time.
Well, I'm gonna try to revive landmarks. Not that I'm making any new ones.
I'm not gonna make any new ones.
I'm saying I'm gonna try to re-promote our season of.
You gonna make another trailer where it looks like an action movie?
Well, I'm just gonna change the thumbnail,
and then they click on it. It's landmarks.
Bump it up on the upload little section there, and see if that helps. Because we got a ton of new subscribers. I have a video that went viral. Right now, it has 150,000 views.
On what channel?
On our channel.
On YouTube though.
YouTube.
Oh wow!
And it's a short. So I've been doing shorts.
What's it about?
It's about crosses. Should Christians use crosses? And so that one has 150,000 views.
Wow, that's great.
And then I put out another short called Are Catholics Saved? That one has 50,000 views. Yeah, we have that
that's
one.
That's a lot
and
better.
And then I have a couple videos that there's one, Aliens in the Bible, and that one has 30,000 views. The shorts are definitely doing a lot better than just regular clips.
With the flight, the armies of the aliens?
Yeah. Well, not that. I know.
I'm just joking.
So, you've been preaching through the book of Ezekiel on Wednesdays. How's that been going?
Yeah, it's been going good. I mean, it's going through the major prophets like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel is a little bit tough just because there's so much repetition.
Yeah.
You know, it's like God is just hammering the same points over and over again, which it's all great stuff, but just, you know, stretching it out over the course of 48 weeks is obviously a challenge, but I think Ezekiel has some of the hardest preaching of any book of the Bible, just the most face-rippingest chapters.
Yeah.
So I've liked that. You know, it's been a pleasure, you know, preaching through some of the hard things in Ezekiel. So.
And it could get a little redundant, right? So that's what you're talking about, stretching it out?
Yeah, just because a lot of chapters will repeat material from earlier chapters.
Yeah.
It was the same way when I went through Isaiah and Jeremiah. Just a lot of repetition.
I feel the prophet Ezekiel, obviously he's the one who rips the most. You said you feel like he rips the most, but he's also I feel like he's the one that God. I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but he's the most hard on. You know what I mean?
He takes
away the desire from his eyes, and then he gets up and preaches the next day. And
well, and the other thing that's interesting about that is that even though the hardest preaching of any of the prophets is pretty much found in the book of Ezekiel, it's not really coming from Ezekiel because it's the Lord telling him.
Yeah.
Because the Bible says the word of the Lord came unto Ezekiel saying, and it's actually God speaking directly to Ezekiel. And he actually speaks more directly to Ezekiel than he did with Isaiah and Jeremiah. He actually appears to him with the cherubims and the wheels and the fire and everything and speaks this stuff to Ezekiel. And whenever Ezekiel actually speaks on his own from his own heart, he's usually trying to tone God down and saying like, you know, man, God, are you going to kill everybody? Like, what's going on? You know, he's actually a more gentle person. Yeah. And God has to keep telling Ezekiel, no, these people are wicked. They're evil. They're going to be destroyed. And it's Ezekiel who's actually a mellow guy. And like you said, Ezekiel has to suffer a lot, and he ends up going through a lot of painful things that God puts him through. So we think of Ezekiel as being this really hard preacher, and he was, but simply just because he's preaching what God told him to preach. It's not really coming from his personality.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can turn his down on the headphones a little bit. He is – Pastor Anderson's a different – there we go. Yeah, I definitely agree. I always found it funny that, you know, a lot of people, now I wouldn't say a lot of people, but sometimes people will criticize our style of preaching. They'll say it's too hard, or, you know, we're a little too abrasive. And I always point them to the Old Testament prophets, but specifically Ezekiel, because they'll say, you know, oh, you guys preach against everything. It's like, well, I didn't preach against everything like Ezekiel preached against. Ezekiel preached against the mountains. He preached against the trees. I mean, he was prophesying against the hills and just kind of, you know, passing judgment on everything. Nothing was safe from Ezekiel's preaching.
Well, chapter 16 and chapter 23 are kind of the classic face-ripping chapters. In fact, atheists will sometimes bring up stuff from those chapters. Hmm. Like, can you believe what the Bible says? It's so rude. It's so offensive. It's so graphic.
Yeah.
But it's the word of God.
Yeah, amen. And the words of the Lord are pure words.
Amen.
So I'm sure you've enjoyed preaching through Ezekiel quite a bit.
Yeah.
Just going, because obviously it's the same truths that you've been preaching all along, but it's obviously from someone else's different perspective, another prophet's perspective. And just dealing with other issues that is the nation of Israel was experiencing at that time.
Well, the thing that I love about the Wednesday night series in general is that it gets me to preach stuff that I never would have preached. Because throughout my ministry, I've obviously turned to the famous passages in Ezekiel a lot.
Yeah.
Chapter 16, chapter 23, you know, Ezekiel 22, 30. You go down the list, Ezekiel 28 with Satan and everything. And so going through it chapter by chapter, though, you end up preaching some of the more obscure passages that you would never preach about. But it's not only that it gets me to preach about stuff that I wouldn't have necessarily chosen, but the other thing is that there are some really cool chapters, but if you just got up on a Sunday morning and started preaching them, people would be kind of like, why are you preaching this? Like, just because it's so wild of a sermon.
Yeah.
But, like, the Wednesday night sermon kind of gives you an excuse to preach it. Like, well, I got to go through every chapter.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, right now we're going through, I'm going through 1 Samuel on Wednesday, or not Wednesday, but Thursday evenings.
Mm-hmm.
And I like 1 Samuel because, you know, obviously some of the books in the Old Testament, they can be very deep. Like, if you think of, like, the major prophets such as Zephaniah or Zechariah. But then you have books like 1 Samuel that can get a little deep, but they're palatable because there's just a lot of stories, and people like stories.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're going through right now. I'm going to be preaching through 1 and 2 Samuel, obviously, until the following year. But you're right. I mean, preaching through books of the Bible kind of helps us to just preach things that we typically would never preach. And I typically don't use notes on Thursdays just because the notes are already there.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
You just, like, really study the chapter, learn the chapter, and then just get up and preach from the heart.
Yeah, amen. There's something else that I wanted to mention regard. Oh, okay. So, you got deleted again.
Yeah. My channel got deleted like 2 days ago. So
yeah, I was listening to your sermon from Sunday and then all of a sudden it's like, where is it? I can't find it. I'm like, oh man, did it get deleted? So now the channel to go to, just so we could let everyone know.
Yeah. Right now it's the channel that's called Trump Sucks.
Yeah.
Because here's my rationale. I figure like that the libtard censors over at YouTube, they'll like start to delete the channel and they're like, wait, it's called Trump Sucks. And then maybe they'll let it survive just because they hate Trump. Like, they're going to be like that meme where the guy's like sweating. He doesn't know which button to push. Like, delete Pastor Anderson, is that going to override like their hatred for Trump? Because they want a Trump Sucks channel to exist.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm trying to be smart and go under the radar with that title.
Let me ask you, what do you think? Obviously, there might be someone literally specifically designated to like oversee you.
I don't believe that.
You don't think so?
No, there's no way. Because Because if they really wanted to, they could just eradicate me from YouTube in a matter of 2 hours or something. Because, you know, they could be searching my name and searching and stuff. But yet my channels end up existing for months before they get deleted. Yeah. And then other people mirror my stuff and it exists for months. If they had a full if they had a person designated to deal with it, then they should be fired.
Then what do you think what they're do you not think doing a very is good causing job. Like people to know or YouTube to find out who you are? What is it about the is it just the name on the title?
No, people just are reporting it as inappropriate.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's human beings, viewers, reporting it as inappropriate, which people have always reported my stuff every day for the past 10 years or whatever, or 15 years, I guess, I've been on YouTube. But it's just that in the olden days, people would be like, I'm reporting this as inappropriate, but YouTube wouldn't delete it because they just weren't that strict back then. Whereas now they're just way more strict. And now I'm personally not allowed to have a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And so when people complain, then it's like, oh, this guy. And then they delete it.
I always thought that maybe it was like your name and the title or something like that that was causing YouTube to figure that out.
I don't think so.
Because I was going to propose the idea. I was like, maybe you should change your name. Maybe you should like change your name completely so that, you know,
the artist formerly known as Steven Anderson.
Just turn your name into a symbol. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Or just be like Pastor Lee. Call you Pastor Lee instead.
I am Lee.
Oh, I mean, there are a lot of channels that are out there, though, that have your content. Even from Sunday, like people are constantly uploading your stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So that's good still.
And, you know, my day-to-day, day-in, day-out sermons, they still get just as many views or just as many people listen to them. Yeah. It's just divided over a bunch of channels right. or... You know, people listening to MP3s.
Well, even if you have only like 1,000 subscribers, let's say you reach 1,000, you still get like 5,000, 6,000 views or something.
Yeah. It's just that I can't go viral like I used to. Mm. So none of my sermons can go viral because
You can go viral and you have gone viral. It's just not on YouTube.
It's just not on YouTube.
It's more on TikTok and Instagram. Yeah,
because on YouTube, as soon as a video of mine starts to gain momentum, they'll shut it down because somebody will report it and it'll get shut down.
Because if I remember correctly, there's a guy, he's actually in Texas now, but his name is Oscar, O.T. Mm-hmm. the Baptist. I think that's his profile name. He had a clip of yours, and I think it had 1 million views or something like that. And so that was pretty cool. And then you have another video on TikTok right now that's going viral, right?
Mm-hmm.
You kicking out the guy who's asking you to read a prayer or whatever it may be.
I don't upload stuff to it, but other people did.
Well,
I tried it for a couple weeks because somebody's like, because I didn't really know what it was. And somebody's like, oh, you got to get on TikTok and upload stuff. I uploaded some videos and they went kind of crazy, but it's such a weird website. I decided to just.
Well, the reason I only use the I only edit videos on there and I don't go because other people have asked me that, like, why don't you just post on there? But I just haven't really desired to post anything on TikTok. I know
it's
the algorithm
of an app.
The only thing that would motivate me to do that would be the fact that the algorithm is just really sensitive there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, so it goes, as far as algorithm is concerned, it's like TikTok, you can go crazy viral really easily, but then you can get deleted really easily as well. And then it's Instagram, which you can post a reel on Instagram and literally get like 1,000 views in a matter of minutes. And then it's YouTube shorts. But the thing is, I feel like YouTube has the bigger platform, obviously.
So where does Spoon fall?
Spoon does not fall in any of those categories. Spoon, if anybody doesn't know, Spoon was an app that Pastor Anderson and I were on for probably a couple of weeks. And it was just an audio app. There's no video to
Dude,
it.
Dude, I loved it.
I thought it was great. It's literally kind of like a podcast type of an app for anybody. Yeah. They can put music or just talk or, you know, just talk about random stuff. And Pastor Anderson was on it, and you got people saved on Spoon. It was good. And then I got on there, and, man, we were killing it on Spoon. And then, you know, we started saying the F word and all this stuff, and then that's when the Spoon rulers deleted us.
Yep.
And you could actually upload MP3s of sermons on there as well.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of considering trying Spoon again under a different alias or something like that. Just because, you know, just try different platforms, you know?
I think about that a lot.
Do you really?
The
about Spoon?
Days going back to Spoon.
I thought it was great. Yeah, I probably will upload some stuff to TikTok just because I heard it's the algorithm is really sensitive. And there's like a lot of false prophets on TikTok as well. Weird guys.
Really?
Yeah. And this will carry over into what we're going to talk about next. But there's a guy, his profile name is Gary the Prophet. Okay. And he has like millions of followers and all that. But he uploads all these videos about doctrine. And obviously this guy's not saved. He has a repent of your sins type gospel. And then he preaches just a lot of weird stuff. But people love him. They love him because he sounds like he knows what he's talking about. He goes back to the Greek and all that. But he uploaded this video about exercise. And he's talking about how it's wrong for Christians to lift weights. He goes, you should never lift weights as Christians. That's vain. And the Greek word for gym and all this stuff is just talking about being naked.
What in the world?
Just crazy That's things. Dumb. Just nonsense. But it's unfortunate because he does have a lot of followers. So, you know, people, I'm sure, are listening to that.
Yeah,
nonsense.
I mean, the only reason why the word for naked in Greek is gymnos, which is obviously where we get our word like gym, gymnasium, is just because the Greeks worked out naked.
Yeah.
The dudes did.
Yeah,
not the women, but the men would exercise naked.
Yeah, that's what he was bringing up.
It's not the problem with the exercise. Yeah. It's just the problem with public nudity.
Well, the same guy came out a couple weeks ago, and apparently he's in the UK or something, and he just said, like, I just want to let everyone know that I am officially anointed. And God has anointed me, and here's the proof of it. I walked and created diamonds. So he shows these like zirconias or whatever, and he's saying that when he walks, he creates diamonds with his feet now, and now he's selling them, and people are like, what in the world, Gary? What's wrong with you? You know, and so he just went full-blown heretic at that point. But I thought that was really stupid about that video regarding exercise and lifting weights because you know, the Bible doesn't say that lifting weights is bad or that exercise is bad. On the contrary, it's actually for taking care of your body and your health, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the verse that I would point to, verse that's been on my mind over the last couple of days is 3 John verse 2. It says, Beloved, I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospereth.
Right.
So he says, I wish above all things that you would prosper and be in health, even as thy soul prospers. So, you know, you're doing well spiritually, you're thriving spiritually, but he says, I also want you to be healthy, to be in good health. And and so, you know, obviously everybody will point to this verse, bodily exercise profiteth little, exercise thyself rather unto godliness. But obviously, godliness is more important. Yeah. Rather is a comparison. Like, if you have to choose between training your body and training the spirit, obviously you're going to go with the spirit.
Yeah.
If I have to skip my Bible reading or skip a workout, I'm going to skip the workout because I need to exercise myself rather unto godliness. But to take that one verse and then just ignore everything else that the Bible's teaching, I mean, that's just a horrible way to interpret the Bible.
Two, it says, you know, bodily exercise profiteth little.
Yeah.
So the what it's implying is that it does profit, just not as much as exercising yourself rather into godliness.
It's a comparison.
Yeah.
That's all. Obviously, we're not going to get any rewards in heaven for gains made in the gym or athletic achievements. But yet, if you actually study the Bible start to finish, all the great men of God in the Bible are athletic.
Mm-hmm.
If you study the Bible, like go back all the way to Genesis, right? And you've got Israel himself. And one of the things that he does right away is he removes the stone from the well's mouth.
He deadlifted a stone.
Exactly. He was doing earth gym. And basically, you know, usually all the shepherds would come together to lift the stone. He lifts the stone off the well himself.
Yeah.
And then the same guy later on wrestles with the angel all night.
Yeah.
And so that shows not only incredible strength, but incredible endurance. And one of the attributes that Jacob was known for is that he was a hard worker.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Laban keeps wanting to keep him around and doesn't want to let him leave because he's such a good worker.
Yeah.
Okay. And so obviously back then, they're not going to the gym. and they didn't have the same type of exercise programs that we have today. But that's because they worked hard physical jobs. And if you were a hard worker, you got strong, you got endurance. And so men of God throughout the Bible were athletic in that way. And then, you know, you look at other men, even just like Moses, and look at him just hiking across the desert, these incredible distances. Think about the prophet Elijah. He outran the chariot in the story where, you know, right after he faces off with the prophets of Baal, and he ends up outrunning Ahab's chariot. And I looked it up on a map. That distance is like 22 miles. So he runs 22 miles and outruns the chariot. So here's a man of God in the Bible running 22 miles faster than the horses can pull the chariot. And then you think about men like David. I mean, David's out there fighting all these military
campaigns.
Well,
how about David's mighty men, who the Bible compares to having calves like hinds feet?
Yeah.
It talks about how they run like a roe.
Yeah.
And it's just talking, comparing their running to, or the speed of their running to like an animal, you know?
Right, or Solomon. In the book of Song of Solomon, it talks about him leaping on the mountains, skipping on the hills, running like a roe or a young hart. So we have all these guys in the Bible. They're running, they're strong, they're physically active. And it was really just from their lifestyle. They didn't need to go to the gym because they're outside, they're going everywhere on foot, there aren't any cars. And you might think that people rode horses, but back then, very few people rode horses throughout history. Because just like today, how many people do you know that have a horse now? Mm-hmm. Not that many. And the reason why people don't have horses right now is the same reason why they didn't have them back then, is because they're expensive and take a lot of work to take care of. So your average Joe did not have a horse throughout history. Jesus and his disciples never are riding horses while they're on this earth. I mean, obviously he's going to come back on a white horse, but when they're on this earth, they're on foot and they're going to all the villages, all the towns. Obviously that took a certain level of fitness for Jesus to go up into a mountain and pray, and then they walk over to this village, and then they go to this city, and they're just crossing Israel on foot.
It was a different world back then, and that's why we have gyms today. And obviously you can run today and you can walk today, you can do all those things. But as far as like strength is concerned, you know, we're not lifting a stone off a whale's mouth, you know. But so how do we compensate for that? Because now, like, the jobs that we have today, not all of them, but some of them require being at a desk, working in front of a computer.
Most are not physical. Vast majority.
Yeah, you have to be at a desk. You have to be in front of a computer.
I mean, even somebody who's working in a warehouse or something where it's a little bit physical, but they're using a forklift. I mean, they have a lot of technology to rely on.
So we have to compensate for that.
Exactly.
And go hit the gym and lift heavy weights and actually put ourselves in a position where we purposely actually try to become healthier physically and all that.
Yeah, and another example is Elisha, where when Elijah finds Elisha, Elisha's plowing.
Yeah.
Like he's yoked up with an ox plowing. And so back then, you know, just your daily life as a man, you're going to be pulling a plow. You're going to be carrying big sacks of feed. You have to go draw water. You have to chop wood.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are working hard. And then even the women back then, if you think about it, they've got to wash clothes by hand, you know, scrubbing them on a washboard or something. Yeah. They're hauling water every day.
Well, Isaac's future wife had to pull water out of a well for all the animals, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's heavy lifting, pulling up all that water and everything.
For all the animals, for all the camels and whatever.
So now we have all this wonderful technology, and I'm not against the technology. Obviously, the airplanes and the cars allow us to go soul winning and do missions trips that we would never be able to do without those things. But the problem is that people allow those things to make their life too easy, too comfortable, and then they get sedentary, they get soft, they get weak, and it is just so incredibly unhealthy to be sedentary.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that unless you have a physical job, you must exercise to be healthy. Like if you don't have a physical job and you're not exercising, you're not going to be healthy.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised when you're not healthy because your body was designed for work.
Well, I heard that sitting is like the new smoking.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah. And our bodies are designed to work hard. And when you just sit around all day, every day, and then you go to your job and you're just standing there all day,
yeah,
or sitting there all day, even because some people just say, oh, I'm on my feet. But being on your feet is still not necessarily exercise. You know, you might get really good at standing.
You're not exerting your body.
You're not getting out of breath. You're not doing cardio. Well, you're not building strength.
When I was 17 all the way up until I was about 21, I really got into martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure it was the same with you. I got into Muay Thai kickboxing and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and it was a lot of fun. And I really liked it. I mean, it was a great workout for me, but just in general, it was good for my body. It was good for my mind. And it kept me busy as a young man, you know, just kind of dispersing my energy into different areas so I don't get in trouble anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was really good for me. And even guys in our church, they do a lot of martial arts. But then afterwards, I stopped doing that. I got back into Muay Thai when I was about 30 or 31. And then I stopped. But now I'm on this powerlifting kick right now. And I really like it. Like, you asked me about a year ago, I would have not been into it at all. For me, it's just like, I'm not really into that. That's not my thing. I'll probably do Muay Thai kickboxing again. And the brother Ulysses, he's been doing it for a couple years. There's a lot of guys in our church who have done it for a couple years. They're really strong. And one day, I think we're just at the building, and he's like, why don't you just sign up? Let's just go. And I'm like, all right, let's just go. So we went, we signed up, and I think when we started actually lifting heavy, you know, I got those endorphins and I got a little addicted to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very addictive, but it's a good addiction.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a healthy high.
Yeah.
And basically, it's a way to keep your mind at an even keel because people are so depressed right now. Like, people are more depressed than ever. They're sad. They're down. And part of it is because they're sedentary.
Yeah.
Getting out and physically working hard actually releases endorphins. And so, you know, we often think of exercise as being good for our physical health, but it's also critical for your mental health.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100% because being a pastor is actually very stressful.
Oh, yeah. It's just – not only is it stressful, it's just an unhealthy lifestyle all the way around.
Yeah.
And that's why so many pastors are super unhealthy, super out of shape. Because here's the thing. You're working hard as a pastor – but it's not physical.
Right.
You're working hard mentally, and not just mentally, spiritually. You feel drained spiritually. Like,
other than the aerobics class on the midweek service and the Sunday morning, Sunday night, right?
But Jesus said, I feel that virtue has gone out of me.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel after I preach a sermon or after I go soul winning.
Yep.
You feel like virtue has gone out of you. So you're mentally drained, you're spiritually drained, and you just feel tired from working hard because you are working hard, but it's not physical at all. So you combine that with sometimes traveling. And when you're traveling, you can't really necessarily eat the nutritious foods that your wife would normally serve you at home.
Yeah.
So you're eating at restaurants, which is not as healthy. And then, you know, maybe you're getting together with people for lunch or dinner as part of your job, just meeting with people. And, you know, you combine all this, the stress, the persecution, the hard mental work with little physical work, because, you know, much study is a weariness of the flesh too.
Yeah.
The soul winning, the preaching, all of it. And it's just a recipe
for
having just horrible health.
Oh, yeah.
And so as a pastor, you have to make a point to eat healthy, get enough sleep, and exercise.
Well, I agree with that because, you know, I love pastoring. I love preaching God's word. I love dealing with people and doing the ministry, serving the Lord. But it is taxing. Mm-hmm. And it was taxing on my mental health where I kind of felt, you know, about a year ago as though my mood was just not as good.
Yeah.
And maybe I was a little short.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my stress levels were really high.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely see a big difference now because, you know, obviously we're mind, body, and spirit. And we could be exercising the spirit constantly, which is what we do. We read the Bible, we go soul winning, we go to church, we talk about the things of God. But the truth is that we are mind, body, and spirit. And so each of those factors play a role into our overall health, not just spiritual, but even physical.
Yep.
So if you're excelling spiritually, but your body is atrophying and you're not doing well, it's going to affect your spiritual life.
Well, and it's a bad testimony to the church members.
Right.
Because, you know, the church members, they look to us for leadership, and they want to follow us as we follow Christ. Mm-hmm. So, they shouldn't be following us to McDonald's, or following us to being obese, mm-hmm. or following us to diabetes, and following us to heart disease because we didn't take care of our body. And, you know, it's amazing how preachers, they get up and preach hard against smoking and taking drugs and doing all this stuff, mutilating the temple of the Holy Ghost with all kinds of, tattoos and whatever. But the point is that as Christians, if we're supposed to take care of the temple of the Holy Ghost, how about eating healthy food and exercising so that we can be in good health even as our soul prospereth?
Right. Yeah, because I do remember in times past, pastors would get up and rip on, MMA or martial arts or lifting weights because they said it was vain and vanity. And they would almost, teach for doctrines, the commandments of men, in a sense where it was just like almost borderline sinful doing those things.
And meanwhile, they're 100 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
Or 50 pounds overweight.
Yeah, they would. I mean, McDonald's was a big thing,
Yeah, it's
back
like
in the day.
When you go soul winning, you stop at McDonald's.
Yeah.
We've tried to change that culture in the new IFB where we only serve nutritious food. When we have church picnics and barbecues and stuff, we get organic food, healthy food. We don't do anything artificial. The way I look at it is, what food would I be buying for this event if Jesus were coming? Mm-hmm. Would I set this before Jesus Christ? Because if I'm not going to set it before Jesus Christ, I'm not going to set it before the least of these, my brethren.
Yeah.
And so, let's say we serve ice cream or something. We don't buy just the cheapest, because a lot of times in the old IFB, if there was ice cream served or whatever, it was just what's the cheapest giant Walmart chemical-filled janky 5-gallon tub of ice cream. I would buy the most expensive quality ice cream that I can buy if I'm serving it to God's people. And ice cream's not necessarily the healthiest food, but I'm just using that as an example that even if we did get something like that, we still want to get the quality stuff.
Yeah.
And not serve junk to people, and when we have burgers or something, we make sure it's the grass-fed, the natural stuff, not just what's the cheapest patty.
One thing I do remember, especially like in the old IFB, is sports was like a god to them. Or I shouldn't say like a god, but they would definitely idolize sports, like basketball.
Like watching sports, not watching playing sports. Yeah.
And so it was kind of funny that they would justify that.
Yeah.
But they would condemn everything else.
Yeah, they'll tell you bodily exercise profited little while sitting around watching professional sports. And let me just say right now, I have zero interest in professional sports.
Yeah, me too.
I don't want to watch sports. And I'm against professional sports. I'm not saying it's a sin if somebody watches it or it's a sin if somebody, becomes a professional athlete or something. But me personally, philosophically, I don't believe that sports should dominate anyone's life.
Yeah.
For me, sports are a part of my life. Exercise is a part of my life. But, I think that some people, like you said, could make it an idol where it becomes the most important thing in their life.
It's the priorities, right? It's like it's not wrong to go play basketball. It's not wrong to go play football and to get involved in these sports, but it has to have its place.
Well, I'll put it this way. I would love to see my kids out there playing basketball, playing football, but I would not want to see any of my kids become a professional athlete.
Yeah.
Because that's not what life is about.
Right. Yeah, these things should assist us in serving God, right? The physical activities that we do, I enjoy powerlifting. I really like it a lot. And I go 5 days a week now, and I have goals. I have weights that I want to hit within the next 6 months. I mean, things that I want to achieve. But at the end of the day, the reason I want to do it, aside from the fact that it's just fun and it's a good stress reliever, mm-hmm. is that it's really good on my mental health, which in turn assist me in serving God.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't understand what you mean by that. like with the mental health. But here's how I'd explain it. Because a lot of people think, well, you know, working out, that's hard work. That's pain. That's suffering. You know, if I'm going for a run or swim or lift or whatever. But what it is that when you're done, you're just in a great mood.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even if you're in pain and agony and misery during the workout, which lifting weights is not misery at all to me. I think lifting weights is easy.
I disagree.
But there are some workouts.
We could agree to disagree.
But there are some workouts that are painful. But when they're done, you're just in a good mood for the whole day. That's what a lot of people don't realize. Is that, isn't it interesting that every time I go for a long run, every time I go swim laps or lift weights or whatever, I'm just in a great mood for the rest of the day, inexplicably.
Yeah.
But it's chemistry.
Yeah.
It's a chemical thing.
Right.
That your body releases endorphins that make you feel good.
Well, what's interesting is obviously, you know, I read my Bible in the morning and then I go to the gym, and I prefer to go to the gym in the morning because of the fact that once I come back to the office after I'm done lifting weights, my state of mind is so good that I get really creative. And my job requires a lot of ingenuity. Mm-hmm. It requires creativity, making content, and I feel like I can't be as creative if I don't hit the gym first.
Yep.
So then, you know, the blood is going. I'm in a good mood. I just hit some PRs. I come back to the office and I'm just like, boom, idea after idea.
Yep.
So it's almost, you know, dependent upon my physical well-being, my mental well-being. So I hit the gym so I could be more effective in my job.
Amen.
Create more content. Have more energy to do more content.
Yep. And you know, just one last point on this vanity issue, like people saying that exercise is vain or unprofitable or whatever. Here's the thing about that, okay? There's nothing vain about being healthy. This is not about, you know, posing and flexing. We're not talking about bodybuilding. Bodybuilding is a stupid sport.
There's a difference between bodybuilding and heavy lifting.
But a lot of people mix these two up.
Yeah.
A lot of people mix up powerlifting and bodybuilding.
Right.
Powerlifting, you're going to the gym and just seeing how much weight you can lift.
Yeah.
Bodybuilding, you're putting on a Speedo, you're waxing all the hair off your body, and you're flexing in front of a mirror with a fake tan or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously kind of queer and weird and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what we're talking about. And here's the thing. You know, you can exercise and work out without being prideful and having ego and just posing for a bunch of pictures. You know, that's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about being healthy. And I'm just going to come out and say it. It is impossible to be healthy without exercising.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a physical job, maybe that's your exercise and that does it for you. But if you have a sedentary job and you're not exercising, you're not going to be healthy. Your heart rate is going to be too high. You're going to have heart disease. You're going to have all kinds of problems. Your body's going to atrophy and decay because you're not using it. Like, our bodies are meant to be used and abused. Like, we need to push our bodies hard. Because, you know, when you go to the gym, you're basically tearing down muscle.
Right.
You know, when you lift heavy, you're tearing down your body in a sense. And then your body goes in and rebuilds.
Yeah.
So you're constantly tearing it down, rebuilding it. It's like if your body's a house, you're constantly renovating it.
Yeah.
And anybody who owns a home knows that this verse is on the tip of my tongue, but I feel like I'm going to misquote it. But in Ecclesiastes, where he says, you know, through much idleness that the house droppeth through.
Yeah.
Like if you don't maintain the house, it decays. Anybody who owns a home knows that you have to keep doing maintenance on your house or everything just gets old.
And the Bible refers to our bodies as a tabernacle, as a house.
Yeah. And so you go to the gym and you're tearing down muscle tissue, you're rebuilding it, you're keeping it fresh.
Well, I think of the verse in the Bible. Wait, are these focused? These are focused, right?
Yeah.
I just thought about that. These, like when you turned them on, they were focused. I think of the verse in the Bible where it says, where Paul said, I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest by any means when I've preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. And I think of the concept of discipline, right? And for example, lifting weights for me has caused me to be more disciplined in other areas because I want to be successful at lifting weights. Because you don't build muscle going to the gym. You don't get stronger going to the gym. It actually happens afterwards. It requires discipline after the gym.
Eating and sleeping.
Eating and sleeping. Mm-hmm. Eating protein, making sure, you know, you kind of stay away from the bad foods because, like, I don't want to do it because I don't want to mess up my gains. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to make sure that I'm able to lift heavier the following week. And if I do this, then it's going to cost me, you know, going for 315 or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And then also it causes me to sleep right because of the fact that my body's rebuilding itself during its sleep. So doing powerlifting has caused me to be more disciplined in these other areas, which in turn obviously helps me spiritually as well.
Well, and Paul is constantly using
athletic examples.
Yeah. You know,
they that are running a race run all, right?
I gave a bunch of examples from the Old Testament of men of God and their physical feats. But the Apostle Paul, he talks about running with patience, the race that is set before us.
I fought a good fight.
He says, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. Yeah. And he talks about keeping under your body, bring it into subjection. You know, he says, look, they, athletes in this world, they do it to win a corruptible crown.
Yeah.
But we, an incorruptible. Yeah. Because, you know, those who know a little bit of history about the ancient Olympics in Greece know that the prize for winning the Olympics was an olive leaf crown.
Yeah.
So it was literally corruptible. Like, yeah, it was literally not something that you could pull out years later, like a gold medal.
Yeah.
You could pull out a gold medal 20 years later, 50 years later. It's still going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas an olive leaf crown is going to dry up, wither up, and decay. And that's what he's probably referring to when he says, you know, they do it to win a corruptible crown. That olive leaf crown that they earn decays and withers away, but we're earning an incorruptible crown. But my point is, he's constantly using athletic illustrations. And he says that they that strive for the mastery must strive lawfully, meaning, you know, not cheating, following the rules. And, you know, he uses all these different illustrations about how we need to be temperate in all things because athletes have to be temperate in all things, meaning they have to be temperate when it comes to their diet. And what does temperate mean? It means basically, you know, self-control,
right,
planning. So they have to think about what they eat. They have to get proper rest. They have to take care of themselves. And they have to think about these things. And spiritually, we need to be temperate.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because he uses those examples. Like, we're looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And the common denominator between the Apostle Paul and an athlete is that they're both disciplined. Right? They're both disciplined to run in the race. He says, I fight, but not as one that beateth the air, so fight I. So it's like the common denominator is they're both disciplined, they're both temperate, but at the end of the day, Paul is going to be the one who actually receives the eternal reward because of it, because he's doing it for an eternal reason, not for a temporal, corruptible crown. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the Bible says, though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. And so, you know, our body will one day die. It's going to decay. And so you better make sure you get the most out of it as you possibly can, not so you can obtain a corruptible crown, but rather so you can use it to its fullest extent to serve the Lord as best as possible.
Now, obviously, any athletic achievements that we have are wood, hay, and stubble. There's no question about that. They are not going to earn us any kind of eternal glory whatsoever.
Yeah.
But the reason that you have to have these athletic achievements or goals, you know, whether that's just something as simple as, you know, I want to run a mile in 5 minutes, or I want to go to the gym and deadlift a certain amount, or I want to bench press a certain amount, or I want to swim a certain distance, whatever those goals are, the reason that those goals exist is simply because they just give you something to strive for. And it just motivates you to actually show up and do the workout.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have any goals, if you're not logging anything, if you're not writing down your gains or anything, you're going to lose motivation, and then you're just going to become a slob.
I think, too, it's just important to have goals and to achieve things, even if they're not necessarily spiritual. It's just good to have a good, healthy hobby.
Yeah.
You know, if I were to choose between, you know, having the hobby of deadlifting 405 by the end of summer or, you know, reaching this level in this video game, I would want to do the powerlifting because it actually has other benefits to it.
It's making you healthy.
It's making me healthy.
Be able to serve God.
And at the end of the day, you know, that's a lot cooler anyways. You know, a video game is not really that
cool. And let's face it, you know, sometimes you go soul winning and some people even struggled with the walking.
Yeah.
Even to just walk for a few hours. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we've taken people on small town soul winning trips and, you know, it's a real physical challenge for them, not just a mental and spiritual challenge, just getting through the walking, especially because in Arizona, the small towns are all on the hills.
Well, do you remember when we went to Aruba?
Yeah, there was a lot of walking.
And you had made the disclaimer, we're going to be doing a lot of walking.
Yeah.
And I remember being there, and literally, we just walked all day.
Well, you know the Going Back to the Greek documentary?
Yeah.
So I was wearing the Apple Watch during the making of that film.
Counting your steps?
And when we were in Cyprus, we walked an average of 9 miles every single day.
Man.
9 miles. That's what the watch said that we were walking every day. And then also we did a mission trip in Arizona. It was only four of us because we were hitting all the Indian tribes.
Yeah.
You know, we only have a couple tribes left to finish now. There's 21 reservations, and there's this one reservation where they live in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Okay. So we wanted to do this reservation. It has like 200 and some people or something. And so we just needed a small group of soul winners because only like 200 people live there. And it ended up being super receptive. We got a ton of people saved. It was an awesome trip. But I kid you not, the four of us that did it was me, my son John, and a couple other guys from our church, Sean Conlon and Daniel Ryder. The four of us went down there, and it was 40. We were only in there for 48 hours when we slept in a tent and just camped out. And we walked 30 miles in 48 hours.
Man.
Because it was like 10 miles. We had to, because there's no way to get to this village by car. There's no roads in or out. The U.S. Postal Service delivers there with donkeys. It's the only town in America, Supai, Arizona, where the mail is delivered by donkeys.
That's cool.
And there are no motor vehicles in the town whatsoever. So it took 10 miles to hike in, and then just walking around doing the soul winning.
Yeah.
Just walking around, preaching the gospel, talking to people. That was another 10 miles.
Yeah.
And then 10 miles out, it's 48 hours, 30 miles, you know. Now, that's kind of extreme, but the thing about that is that, you know, you obviously had to pick guys that could do that. So, you know, Daniel Ryder was able to be up to that challenge, or Sean Conlon, my son John, they had the fitness required.
Yeah.
Like, hey, guys, I need a few guys that are going to be able to do this hike so that we can do this soul winning. And like I said, we got a bunch of people saved, and those guys – I know they had an awesome time. I had an awesome time because it was just fun too, just hiking and soul winning. But they wouldn't have got to go on that trip if they didn't have the fitness. Same thing with the Aruba soul winning.
Yeah, I remember, and I remember thinking to myself because I brought all kinds of equipment. Mm-hmm. I brought like camera equipment to Aruba, and I was carrying that stuff on my. So I had the soul winning stuff, and literally by the end, we were there for like 5 days, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was like a week long trip. Yeah.
I think I had lost like maybe like 10, 15 pounds or something. By that point, because I was carrying all the soul winning equipment as well as the camera stuff. And I was like, wow, this is a lot. And it was hot.
It was physically hard. Yeah.
It was physically hard. It was extremely hot. But, you know, it was good though.
Like, and I mean, we had on that trip, I don't remember the exact stats, but I want to say we had about 50, 60 soul winners, right? It was a pretty big trip. We had people from the Netherlands.
Yeah, I remember that.
Come out. We sponsored people from the Netherlands to come. Because a lot of people in Aruba spoke Dutch.
Yeah.
And then we had people from Venezuela come. Mm-hmm. We had obviously people from the United States, Canada. And we had like 50, 60 soul winners. We had like over, I think, 475, 500 salvations. I don't remember the exact number, but it was a big success.
Yeah, that was an awesome trip. And we didn't use any vehicles.
We didn't rent cars.
We literally just walked everywhere. Even if you wanted to, I think the only time we actually used a vehicle is when we wanted to go to like the south of the island to go swim or something like that. It would just take too long to walk and come back and get ready for everything. Because I think we started soul winning like at 12 in the middle of the day, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is the thing. We did it to where the recreation happened in the morning.
In the morning, yeah.
Because of the fact that around 11 or 12 o'clock was when the beaches kind of opened for business.
Yeah.
And then they became like a party. And it was kind of a bad atmosphere for Christians. So what we did was we would all go to the beaches in the morning, and there was nobody there.
Yeah.
And so you could just enjoy nature, swim, play around at the beach without anybody being around. And then obviously soul winning isn't that good before noon anyway. Usually the best soul winning takes place in the afternoon and evening. So we gave everybody free time until noon, and then we just have lunch and then just spend the rest of the day soul winning and do it that way. Because especially when you're in a place like Aruba, like a lot of the people are scantily clad and stuff. Yeah. Whereas in the morning, it was fine.
Yeah.
So it was perfect.
And also just preaching the gospel is very strenuous as well.
Oh, yeah.
Just and in Spanish, like for example,
that
like
makes it even harder.
I speak Spanish and I'm fluent in Spanish, but I'm not as accustomed to preaching the gospel in Spanish.
It's more tiring.
Like over and over and over. I literally remember thinking to myself, like, I'm actually tired of preaching the gospel in Spanish.
And in Aruba, it was mainly Spanish.
Yeah, it was mainly Spanish.
It was, even though that's not the official language, they had about 30,000 illegal immigrants from Venezuela in Aruba, and they were the most receptive. So even though they were the minority, since they were the receptive ones, that's who we ended up doing most
of
our soul.
That was mentally straining to preach the gospel. And then when we went to Sonora, right, Mexico, I think Imuris is the same thing. It was just mentally straining to preach the
gospel.
You were
my soul winning partner on that trip, remember?
You remember the guy that we spoke to? And I was giving the gospel
to
this guy.
I know what you're
going to say. And I told him, I said, you know, I was talking about lying and, you know, how is the sin. And I said, you know, and I don't know, what is it? The exact
I think this is what it was. You said, like, you know, if a person lies, what are they or something?
What do you call them?
And what do you call somebody who lies? And he said, a politician.
Yeah.
That was funny.
We both started laughing. It was pretty funny. And then, you know, because how many kids do you have, Pastor Anderson?
Hold on, let me think. No, I'm just kidding. No, my wife's pregnant with number 12.
12. At that time, you had probably like 10?
I don't know.
But I remember we went to this house, and we were talking to this guy, and he had like 15, 20 kids or something like that. So Pastor Anderson was giving the illustration about having kids, and Pastor Anderson's like, you know, I got 10 kids. And if you were to say that here, people would be like, whoa. But the guy was just not impressed. He was just kind of like...
He wasn't even fazed.
Yeah, he wasn't even fazed, but it was so funny. That was a cool trip. Well, yeah, you know, along with exercising, you know, obviously eating right, I'm really big, and I'm a big proponent of fasting. Mm-hmm. You know, I think fasting is really good for you. And in fact, I actually fast for about maybe 15 hours before I start lifting, which is actually completely contrary to what people tell you to do when you lift. They'll say you have to eat like, you know, 2 hours before and you have to have your protein shake and do all these things or whatever. And they say if you don't, you're not going to have a good lift and, you know, you're not going to feel as strong. But I lift on a fasted state. And in fact, after I'm done lifting, I still fast for about three more hours or so, and I feel strong. And the reason I do it is because of the fact that when I fast after I lift, you know, fasting obviously puts your body in a state of autophagy, and it begins to rebuild your damaged cells and all that. And so aside from the fact, you know, for example, if you want to lose weight, you know, lifting heavy is really good for you, but then you add on top of that fasting.
Yeah, and
it's really good.
And just to give kind of the nuts and bolts of this for people who don't really know how this works, because I practice this as well, intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
I usually do it about 5 days a week. And what this involves is simply skipping breakfast. That's all. Because here's the thing. If you don't eat breakfast, you're not really that hungry. It's not even that hard.
It's more of a mental thing for a lot of people.
But skipping dinner would be very difficult. Okay, because, you know, you want to eat lunch, you want to eat dinner, but when you first wake up in the morning, you're not really that hungry. At least I'm not. I mean, I was when I was a kid, but as an adult...
I don't think a whole lot of people could say that. I mean, I'm personally don't get hungry in the morning, but I think a lot of people eat breakfast.
Yeah, but it's way easier to skip breakfast than dinner, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So here's what I do is I just wait 16 hours. So... Yeah. Let's say, you know, the last time that I ate was at 8 p.m. or something. Then I just am not going to eat to the next day until noon.
Yeah.
Or if I, you know, if I stopped eating at 6 p.m., then I don't eat till 10 a.m. or something. Mm-hmm. So it's just 16 hours of not eating, and it's really just skipping breakfast. So you just wake up, drink a glass of water, and just push through until lunch. And then just kind of look forward to lunch and just get busy with other things. And it's very biblical. Because, you know, the Bible talks about in Ecclesiastes, you know, woe unto thee, O land, like when your princes are children. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit maybe, but, you know, your princes are children.
Rise up
in
the morning.
And it says that they eat in the morning.
Mm. Yeah. For what is it? For pleasure, not for strength.
No, he says they eat for The good example is those who eat for strength and not for drunkenness.
For drunkenness, correct.
That's the good example. But the bad example are the ones who eat in the morning.
Yeah.
So the idea of skipping breakfast is biblical anyway.
Yeah.
And so I don't skip breakfast on Sundays because I find that if I skip breakfast on Sundays, then it affects my preaching. Just I have to really have those calories in me.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I just end up preaching too much about food anyway. And so, like, my wife always says, like, oh, I can tell you were hungry during that sermon because you kept using food illustrations. But, like, I find that I don't preach as well if I'm on a caloric deficit on Sundays. So I eat breakfast on Sundays, and then I usually eat breakfast on Saturday simply because I'm usually going on some kind of a long run or something.
Mm.
So if I'm going on a really long run, then I need to get calories in me before that run.
Yeah.
But as far as lifting weights, though, lifting weights fasted is great. And I'll run fasted, too. I just can't go on a really long run fasted.
Yeah.
But I can do short runs like sprints and stuff. I can do those fasted. Lifting weights fasted. I'm for it.
I think it's great. I don't eat breakfast at all. Like, I don't eat breakfast for 7 days.
Yeah.
I do eat lunch and I do eat dinner. But when I'm cutting, not dieting, cutting.
Yeah, men don't diet.
We cut.
We cut weight.
We cut weight. When I'm cutting, I typically do OMAD, which is one meal a day. And I'll fill in all my calories and my protein in that lunch period or whatever it may be so I can cut weight. And once I do that for about – I do that sometimes for about 3 months. I find that I'm just not even hungry for dinner. You know?
I've never gone to that level.
Yeah,
I'm kind of a big eater, and I'll just be perfectly honest with you. I tend to kind of struggle with gluttony sometimes. Like, I tend to overindulge. That's, you know, just to confess my faults one to another.
I think we need to cut this podcast.
Like, no, but seriously, like, I tend to overindulge.
Yeah.
Like, you've probably been with me sometimes and seen me, like, overeat. You know, like when we go out to eat, I'll eat all my food, and then I start eating food off your kids' plates.
So Pastor Anderson has this thing that, like, when we're on trips or something and we're hanging out, I have to make sure that I just eat all my food before he finishes his, because he has no problem with just coming to my plate and just eating my food.
Well, I will finish other people's plates. Am
yes,
I right?
Yes, you're correct on
and
that.
And, like, I literally, when I go out to eat with your family, I'll finish my entire meal. I'll eat your kids' food.
Yeah, he'll eat my kids' food, actually. So one time we went to Lucille's. Went to Lucille's, and you know, my son, he's a slow eater. And Pastor Anderson was done with his pulled pork sandwich. And then he just goes to my son, he's like, "You're gonna finish that?" And he just starts eating his food, you know. But yeah, I do know that you're a big eater.
Well, even when we were at Islands,
I ate
the hot dog. Your daughter's hot dog
or
something?
You broke off the front piece because, you know, you don't want to be too crazy about it. You broke off the front piece. You don't want to be too unethical about it. So he broke off the front piece where she bit off, and then he just ate the remainder of it.
Well, you know,
we would say in modern terms, you're a foodie. That's what we call it, a foodie.
But even when we were just in Arizona, do you remember how some of my church members just coincidentally showed up at the same fish restaurant as us.
Yeah, and you went to go eat their onion rings.
And then, like, they went, they didn't finish their onion rings, and I went over and just ate all the onion rings. So, two things about that. Number one is that I don't like to see food go to waste. Like, it really bothers me. That's part of the reason why
Let's hear the real reason, Pastor.
But the real reason is that I just eat too much.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to overindulge because I just like to eat.
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, the intermittent fasting is an easy way to not overdo it because, you know, at least there's only so much I can put down my gullet in those 8 hours.
Yeah.
You know.
And then, well, like, I agree. Like, for example, I like to eat a lot.
Yeah.
And intermittent fasting and OMAD is really good for me in that way because of the fact that when I do OMAD and I eat one meal a day, it actually decreases my hunger to the point where I don't want to eat. And when I get on keto and I do, and I couple that with intermittent fasting, the fat satiates my hunger. So I'm actually not hungry and I'm not thinking about food. Cause you know, you don't always want to live your life thinking about food.
Right.
You know, sometimes if I'm not careful, I just think about food. Like, what am I going to eat for lunch? What am I going to eat for dinner? But when I couple those two together, I don't think about food at all. You know, because I have a tendency to overeat as well. And I could easily justify it and say, well, I'm going to go lift right now or I'm going to fast. But I'd rather just not think about food and just kind of have the discipline of thinking about other things and not be hungry. And most of the time, let's just be honest, it's our mouth that's more hungry than our stomach.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
We like the taste of food and all
but,
that.
You know, for me, another trick that I will sometimes use besides the intermittent fasting is just like filling up all like fill up on fruits and vegetables just to fill my stomach with that stuff. And then that way I'm not as hungry for eating the really high calorie stuff. You know what I mean? So every single day I'm just pounding apples, oranges, bananas.
Okay. So you know. On our way back from that trip that we recently did.
Yeah.
Pastor Anderson was sitting behind me, and it was me and Pastor Bizarnski. Me and Pastor Bizarnski, we're just talking, and I just hear Pastor Anderson in the back for like 40 minutes straight just killing oranges. It's like, and I like kind of like just turn to look, and there's just orange stuff all over his hands. He's just going to town. I'm like, how many oranges do you have back there?
But I eat a lot of fruit.
The guy ate an orchard. I'm just telling you.
But I eat like usually like probably 2 apples a day.
Yeah.
You know, oranges, bananas, pineapples, baby carrots. I'll eat so many baby carrots because that stuff, it fills you up. And like if I crave something sweet, I just hit the fruit.
So when you say you fast, you consume fruits and vegetables during your fast?
No.
Okay.
The fasting is only 16 hours.
Yeah.
It's just it's basically just skipping breakfast. That's
you're
all
saying
it is.
After your meals and stuff.
No, I'm
like
saying
that,
during my window of eating.
Yeah.
Every day, which is from lunch to dinner time. Yeah. During my window of eating, I pound a lot of fruits and vegetables so that I don't eat too much of the wrong things.
Yeah.
And you know, there's certain things that are good about my habits is that like I never drink sodas. Like I only drink.
We're ending
water,
this podcast right now. This is
like
you're not allowed to talk about this stuff.
I virtually never drink sodas
drink coffee, you don't do soda.
I rarely even drink juice.
So what's your unhealthy thing that you like to go what's your go-to unhealthy thing?
The thing that is the
cuz you're not perfect, Pastor.
No, I'm not. The temptations for me
that
I would go to is first of all cereal. Like if I want to just really go off the cliff,
like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, or something?
It'd be like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, or just any cereal. I just like Frosted Mini Wheats. I could just kill so many Frosted Mini Wheats.
Those are gross.
So like for me, like the temptations are like milk, and like if I have my way, I would drink 2 pints of milk with every meal, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like I love milk. But
what do you drink raw milk?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the problem with milk is that you may grow thereby. You know? So milk is great for a child growing up. But as an adult, I found that, like, you know, if I drink milk like I want to, I'll just gain too much weight.
Yeah.
You know? And it's expensive anyway. Yeah. So I rarely drink milk, but that's my guilty pleasure is like, chocolate milk, strawberry milk, milk, cereal.
What's your favorite
with milk.
Cereal?
I mean, I go through different phases. Obviously, Cinnamon Toast Crunch is pretty high on the list, but and Frosted Mini Wheats.
It's funny you
Frosted
mentioned that.
Frosted Mini Wheats is
because last Thursday these are good, right? Last Thursday, I deadlift on Friday.
Yeah,
and I was gonna shoot for a PR. Like 320 on Friday. And so I was eating right on Thursday. I eat liver. I like to eat liver. Really good for you. Superfood. And then I just told my wife, I was like, I'm going to go get a cereal. And I don't eat cereal. Like I haven't ate cereal in a long time.
Yeah.
And so I was actually going to go get Honey Bunches of Oats, which is actually one of my favorites. This is my go-to. But you know, you're walking
like
down the
too.
Aisle and then Cinnamon Toast Crunch was there first.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, just this once. So I killed the whole box that night. Or not that night, but I did like half of the box that night. But you know what? My lift was really good on Friday. And in fact, I hit 4 PRs.
Let's call it like a carbo load.
Yeah. I hit 4 PRs. And then it was just like, I think I'm going to celebrate with a bowl of cereal. I didn't do that, but Cinnamon Toast Crunch is definitely really good. But the only problem is with me, if I eat Cinnamon Toast Crunch, I get like a sugar hangover the next day or something, you know?
Well, I don't eat it. all the time because obviously I'm disciplined.
Yeah.
But
you keep under your body.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, if you asked me about my sins,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I wanted to know what you struggle with. What are the temptations that are
those
coming?
Those are the temptations are like milk, cereal, ice cream, stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So now he's mentioning ice cream. So there's more actually.
Yeah.
What's your favorite ice cream?
Anything with chocolate and peanut butter.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. So I'll do like a chocolate peanut butter milkshake or like. But this podcast is getting a little off track because we're supposed to be like, we're supposed to be helping people be healthier. Well, yeah, and now we're saying a bad example.
Yeah, but here's the thing though.
We're showing that we're human.
We're showing that we're human because we don't want people to think that this is how we always are.
Right.
In general, this is how we live. But all of us have.
Well, you know, you bring up a great point, and I wanna make this point too, is that I do believe that it's healthy to have one meal per week where you just basically go
binge.
Crazy. Just binge, yeah. No, I do, because I'll be very austere the whole week.
Yeah.
And then one meal per week, I do believe in just going for broke.
Kind of like a reward type of a thing, right?
Well, I think that there's science behind it as well, because what it does is it kind of reboots your metabolism. Mm. Because if you're eating lean all the time, then your body kind of adjusts to that.
Yeah.
Whereas it kind of provides a nice shock to the system
yeah.
when you have one indulgence per week. Now, some people talk about a cheat day. That's too much because you can undo all the progress that you made in the whole week in one cheat day.
Mm-hmm.
But a cheat meal, there's only so much you can eat in one meal. So yeah. if you just make one cheat meal a week, and then that could have a psychological boost of giving you a chance once a week to kind of splurge or indulge. You know?
And I think like, you know, obviously it depends on what your goals are. What do you want to achieve? Because if you want to, like, for example, I wanted to achieve a certain weight by November. And so I was very strict on my diet. I didn't have a cheat day. I didn't have one day a week that I would eat crazy. I was just very strict on my diet. And then I broke it when we went to Lucille's and I had that pulled pork sandwich and I kind of splurged. And then it was fine because the day after I just went back on my regular diet and I was fine. You know, but I definitely agree with that.
Well, you know, when you talk about goals, we have our different athletic goals and they keep us motivated, they keep us going. But if we don't hit the goals, it's not really the end of the world.
Right.
Because for me, my biggest goal, if I were to just articulate my biggest exercise or health goal, is that I want to be preaching when I'm in my 90s.
Yeah.
You know, if God allows me to for my days to be long and for it to be well with me on the earth, then, you know, I want to be preaching in my 90s. Mm. I want to be healthy and strong, not just physically, but mentally. So yeah. I want to work my brain. I want to work my body. That's the ultimate goal, is just longevity in the ministry.
Yeah.
Just being able to continue ministering, continue preaching, continue soul winning. These other athletic goals aren't really that important. I'll give you an example. You know, one time several years ago, I was training to run a certain marathon. And so I had this marathon training plan, and the marathon training plan culminated in a 20-mile run. And then if you finish that 20-mile training run and that whole training week, then you just have what's called the taper, where for the next 3 weeks, you just run less and less and kind of let your body recover for the marathon. So I spent months and months training for this marathon. I finally got to that 20-mile final, like, capstone run, and it went great. Like, I ran the 20 miles. I felt great. Piece of cake. And I got done with that run, and I was like, man, this marathon's in the bag. Training's done. Now I just have to taper. And I kid you not, like 4 days later, I injured my ankle and just like couldn't run the marathon. So it was like I did all the training and didn't even do the event. So it's like, what a waste, right? Except it's not a waste because who really gives a rip if I ran that marathon or not? It's vain. It doesn't really mean anything.
Well, too,
the
maybe
training is what mattered.
The Lord maybe allowed that because he just wanted your body to be physically fit. To be able to serve him or something.
But not necessarily to have some athletic achievement.
Yeah.
So it's like, basically, I don't have any regrets about that training because I got healthy in that training.
Yeah.
I got the cardiovascular fitness.
Well, that's kind of scary.
You know? And so God basically, you know, it wasn't his will for whatever reason for me to run that marathon or have that achievement. But it doesn't mean I'm going to stop trying.
Yeah.
I still keep trying stuff, you know. And right now, I've been running a lot with my son, and my son is training for a marathon, and you know, he and I, God willing, we're hopefully going to run an ultra marathon in March that we're training for. And so another thing is that this has allowed, you know, me to bond with my son over running. And also my daughter. One of my daughters is pretty into running. And, you know, for a dad to be able to bond with his teenage daughter is important. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's a generation gap that could be there. So some of these activities could bridge that gap a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a social aspect, too, of exercising with people. Like, I know you lift with people.
Yeah. Like
I lift by myself, but I run.
I do have a goal. Like, I have a goal. So I started lifting in September of 2021, and right now I'm deadlifting 350, and my goal is to hit 405 by the end of summer, but I actually might do that a lot sooner. And so I do have that goal that I want to hit. I'm hoping the Lord just, you know, doesn't allow me to get injured so I can hit that
He's
goal.
He's going to give you the thorn in the flesh so that you don't get prideful.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm going to try my best to be humble. I'm going to be humble. I'm going to stay humble.
But you know what? That you're joking, but that's true too, though.
Yeah.
Because honestly, like, that's I wondered if maybe that's why, you know, a lot of times I've tried to have various athletic achievements and they almost always fall through. But I still do the training.
Yeah.
I still got healthy. It might just be because God just doesn't want us to get too prideful or full of ourselves. And I think that's really important.
Well, you mentioned
that you don't get ego.
You mentioned with your kids, and it is true because, you know, we have a lot of young men in our church, mm-hmm. very athletic, very strong. You know, we have power lifters. We have people who like running. We have people who are into martial arts. And so me lifting has created somewhat of a camaraderie in the church.
So you're kind of bonding with young people in the church.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're bridging a generation gap.
Yeah, because there's a guy in our church, Giovanni. He's 17 years old. The guy's deadlifting a crazy amount. Was at 435 was like the last thing that he hit. But there's a camaraderie with him and I because we have this common interest. Mm-hmm. We encourage each other. And then we even do like church lifts, where, you know, some of the guys will meet up at a gym on a specific date to hit PRs, and they'll lift and they'll squat, you know. And so it creates that camaraderie, and I think that's really good. I think that's better than, you know, just kind of, oh, let's get together and play video games or something like that. You know what I mean? Let's get together and actually squat or do some deadlifts.
Yeah, and obviously we're constantly talking about the Bible at church services. Anybody who's been to our churches knows that the conversations – revolve around the Word of God. Yep. There's a lot of soul winning, a lot of missions going on, you know, but it can also be nice to sometimes bond with people on another level as well, you know, and especially with your kids. I mean, I know your kids are pretty young.
Yep.
My kids are older. You know, I have adult children, teenage children.
Yeah.
And so some of these are just good, clean, fun activities that I can get with them and compete with them a little bit and, you know, show them that the old man can kind of keep up a little bit or at least try to keep up.
Well, I just think I think it's good for our churches to be characterized by people who take their health into consideration and they're athletic. They're people who like to run. There's people who like to lift. It's not just like a church where it's just like, well, we only, you know, preach about the Bible and that's it. You know, we don't, everything else is off the, you know, off the shelf there. We're not allowed to do anything else. It's like, no, we get into these things, you know? And the reality is that it's good for us as pastors, it's good for us as church members to take into consideration that our health is important in order to help us to serve God better in the coming years.
Well, and the reason that I will sometimes talk about this subject from the pulpit, and the reason why I think this podcast is important, talking about it right now, is simply because I love my church members.
Yeah.
And I want them to be happy. I don't want to see them having a bunch of diseases that are preventable. Yeah. I mean, look, diseases are going to happen. Sicknesses are going to happen even if we do all the right things.
Yeah.
But a lot of sicknesses and diseases
are preventable. Absolutely.
And if we love our members, we don't want them being depressed, sad, sick, heart disease, diabetes.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want them suffering. We want them to be blessed. We want them to be happy. And so if we love our people and we know that this is something in our lives that's making our quality of life way better, it helps us serve God better, it helps us feel better, we can get along with people better, we can have a mental even keel, wouldn't we want to share that with other people
Absolutely.
And not just let them keep eating junk and sitting around
along
and
with
getting
that,
worse.
I do want to mention this, is that I want to encourage young people to obviously, you know, start exercising, but I want to specifically encourage them to start lifting, because new lifters, right, and you would agree, have an advantage over a lot of people, even if you're really small, for example. Because, you know, a lot of people will say, some guys will say, well, I'm really small, I'm not that strong, but they actually have a huge advantage. And it is a medical scientific advantage of the fact that they have what's called newbie gains. They're able to make these large achievements with weights and actually get strong really fast in 6 months or in 12 months. And it's really good for them. It can boost their confidence. It makes their body healthier. But just the newbie gains just in general.
Well, if they're small and weak, that's just all the more reason why they need to lift anyway.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is,
because we should work on our weaknesses.
Absolutely. But what I'm saying is, they may think, well, what difference is it going to make because I'm small?
No, it'll make a huge difference. Huge a little difference. Bit goes a long way.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, the newbie gains. You will make a crazy amount of gains and strides in weightlifting if you just start now, even if you're a small person. You know, Ulysses, you know, how much did you weigh when you first started lifting? 120. And, you know, right now you're about what? 170. And you're lifting, you're doing the big three, the deadlifts, bench press, and squats. He's stronger than I am. And so he can tell you from experience that, you know, you can achieve great goals like that. And even if you're a new lifter, it's there. Research the newbie gains. It can happen for you. I want to encourage people to do that.
And so, you know, obviously people just need to find a form of exercise that they like.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, you're not going to stick with it. So, right. You know, whatever you like, whether it's running, swimming, biking,
martial
lifting,
arts,
whatever. But let me say this about lifting, because I'm big on lifting myself. I like lifting. Here's what I like about it, and maybe this would encourage people a little bit. And I don't know if you quite agree with me on this for some strange reason, but you're wrong. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, the thing is, like,
you're gonna say it's easy.
It's so easy. Yeah. Like literally on the pain scale, it's like a 2 out of 10. It's so easy that, like, even if I'm just exhausted, tired, having a bad day, maybe even like coming down with something, and I'm just like, I don't care how rotten I feel. Like, going to the gym and lifting weights for an hour is super easy.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, for me, running, swimming is a little bit more strenuous, a little more painful. I mean, running is a lot higher on the pain scale than
endurance
than lifting.
Training.
Yeah. So, like, if I'm feeling really motivated, then I can get out there and do some running and stuff. But I have to be motivated to go running.
Yeah.
Lifting is just like, roll out of bed, go lift. Like, lifting, to me, lifting is super easy. And so even if somebody says, man, I just don't really have a lot of mental discipline, or I just don't like to suffer, I don't like to go through pain. To me, like, lifting weights, the pain is so minimal. It's so easy.
Well, it's minimal if you're not lifting heavy weights.
No, I think lifting heavy weights is the easiest. Because I find it harder. I find it more painful when you do high reps.
No.
Dude, high reps hurt, in my opinion.
Well, high reps are definitely strenuous.
Because when we talk about lifting heavy, I work in the 4 to 6 rep range.
Yeah.
That's the range. And to me, it's so easy. Because it's like I can do anything for 4 reps,
I would agree.
It's over so fast.
That's definitely easy.
Before the pain hits, it's over.
I would say when you start lifting heavier, though, that is difficult. That is hard. It's very strenuous on the body.
I feel like it doesn't change because you got stronger to compensate.
For example, like on Friday, I did 4 PRs of deadlifts, and Monday actually when I did squats, after that I was just completely exhausted the following day. Like, it drained my body. And it was very
obviously it's exhausting, but I'm saying getting down there, I'll put it this way. I never dread a lifting workout.
Yeah.
I'm never like, oh man, I got to go to the gym and lift or something like that.
Well, I never
dread it. But I do sometimes dread runs.
There are
swims.
People that do dread it, though. I'll just be honest. Well, I think you're just a different breed.
I can only speak from my own experience.
Yeah. I agree with you on that because I never dread going to the gym. Like, I enjoy, like, I've never had a day where it's just like, oh man, I got to go to the gym today. Like, I enjoy it every single time.
But I mean, for running, for swimming, sometimes I have to really psych myself up because, like, it's hard because I'm just like, this is going to hurt. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, Like, I have to really psych myself up. Whereas I don't have to psych myself up to go to the gym.
Some people do, though. Some people do have to psych themselves up.
Like, lifting weights is easy, in my opinion.
There's some people that do have to psych themselves up and get themselves motivated to go to the gym. I'm not
I don't think it matters how much you're lifting. I think it's the same difficulty, because if you're doing 4 to 6 reps and you're going to failure on every set, you're both working just as hard. If one guy is lifting, you know, 150 pounds, another guy's lifting 250 pounds, if they're both doing 4 to 6 reps to failure, the pain is the same, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, as I've added weight over the years onto the bar, it doesn't hurt more. I got stronger and I'm lifting more weight, but it feels the same to me. I don't see what the difference is.
I disagree, but I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, okay.
I see your point of view. I get what you're saying, and we're going to cut this segment out of the pot. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, but and here's the thing. I know you – lifting weights is all you do.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I do a lot of cardio.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I do lift weights. I'm for lifting weights. I try to lift weights.
I like long walks on the beach.
I try to lift weights 5 days a week. That's what I do on a good week.
Yeah.
Some weeks I only make it 4 or 3.
Well, let me share something with you. It's pretty interesting. Dr. Rita was actually saying, because I was talking to her about weightlifting and running, and she holds the opinion that from a medical scientific perspective, that you obviously have to do it all, right?
Yeah.
Like, not one's better than the other. But she was saying there's certain people who are more apt or will succeed more in endurance running than weightlifting and vice versa. And she was saying typically in her experience from what she's seen, people with type O blood are more conducive to running and endurance.
I'm actually O negative, so.
Yeah, so that would make sense. And she gave me the science behind it, but I don't remember exactly what it is. There's a certain way your body's built where it's more conducive to running.
And then so that's your excuse why you don't run?
Well, type A, which I'm type A, is...
That's a handy excuse for you.
Yeah, exactly. Type A is actually able to lift heavier weights. They're actually more conducive to heavy lifting. And so, but she said you have to do both, obviously, but there's just one that you're going to excel at far greater than the other.
Well,
so I'm going to use that to say I'm never going to run in my life.
But I will say this, though.
God made me in a way that I'm not to run.
I will say this, though. If people's goal is weight loss, because let's face it, most people are overweight in America, 2022 America.
Powerlifting is the way to go.
The vast majority of people are overweight. I would say that if you want to exercise for weight loss, then lifting heavy is the way to go.
Absolutely.
A lot of people don't get this.
Yeah.
But like, I'll give you an example. Just this morning, I lifted, of course, before I came over here, and I burned – my watch said that I burned 400 calories doing that lifting. Weird thing, if I get on my bike and ride my bike hard for an hour, I'm barely going to burn 400 calories if I'm lucky. If I get in the pool and swim for an hour, I'm only going to burn 400 calories. And like I said, lifting's way easier.
Yeah.
And you still burn that 400 calories or whatever. Now, running for an hour, you know, you'll burn more like maybe 600 or 700, but it's way harder.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people. And a lot of people, by the way, when they lift, they're not getting the most bang for their buck because they focus on tiny muscle groups.
Yeah. You got to do the compound workouts.
They think like, oh, I got to lose my belly, so I'm going to do sit-ups or something.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Your abs are a small muscle group, and you can't target what fat on your body you burn off. You burn all the fat off equally.
Yeah.
So doing sit-ups doesn't burn stomach fat any more than doing squats or whatever. You want to use huge muscles because those are the ones that are going to give you the most bang for your buck.
And what he's referring to is the big three.
Well, you talk about the big three, but you're leaving some stuff out, buddy, because there should be a big five.
He's talking about the overhead military press.
And pull-ups.
At the end of the day, though, you can get away with it with the big three. Those are the most important ones.
The big three he's talking about are squats, deadlift, and bench press.
Yeah, which I agree with you about the pull-ups and the overhead
military
press.
To me, my favorite two exercises that I like better than even those three is the overhead military press and pull-ups.
Yeah. It's because you're not as strong on the deadlift. I think that's what it is. You're going to favor that, which you know.
Of course, I also don't use the training wheels.
He's talking about my belt.
I don't use training wheels either. So, but anyway. But the thing is, you know, you want to use big muscle groups. they're gonna burn more calories.
Well, your legs are the biggest muscle in your body.
Of course, your biggest muscles are your glutes, which is your butt muscles.
Yeah,
and your quads.
Yeah.
Obviously, your chest is a big muscle group. Your hamstrings, you know, so that's what your shoulders, back. Mm. That's what you want to focus on are big muscle groups, and you'll burn tons of calories. And by the way, a lot of people will say like, "Oh, I don't have time. I don't have time to work out." But what it really is people are just wasting hours and hours of their day watching TV,
TikTok,
on social media, just surfing the net, like not even doing anything productive on the net, just fooling around, okay? People are wasting a lot of time. Let me just break it down to you, okay? Let's just put it this way, okay? Let's say Monday through Friday, average American, 8-hour work day, right? 8 hours. Stop and think about it. You got 24 hours in the day. So let's say you sleep for 8 hours, spend 8 hours at work. That's 16 hours, right? You could spend 2 hours on personal devotions, right? Just reading the Bible, praying, singing hymns, whatever you do for personal devotion. You could spend 2 hours on that. Mm-hmm. Then you could spend 2 hours of quality time with your family.
Yeah.
Then you could spend 2 hours working out.
Yeah.
And then you could spend 2 hours on just your personal needs, like, say, taking a shower, brushing your teeth, eating breakfast, eating lunch, eating dinner, whatever. 2 hours of time with your family, 2 hours of time with the Lord, 2 hours of time working out, 2 hours of time, you know, on your personal needs, and 8 hours of sleep and 8 hours of work. And you could do that 5 days a week, let alone the weekend. You'd have even more time on the weekend. Like, how do people say they don't have time?
Yeah.
Or
I think it's just an excuse not to go to the gym.
Or you say,
and
like,
themselves.
Okay, well, I work a 10-hour day at my job. Okay, so you work a 10-hour day at your job, 1 hour of personal devotions. And you think most Christians are spending an hour of personal devotions? Because they're not. I wish they were. But 10-hour workday, 1 hour personal devotion, 1 hour exercise. You still have 2 hours of quality time with your family, and you still have 2 hours to just do nothing.
Well, even then they say
sleep 8 hours.
Even then they say don't lift, you know, more than an hour and 15.
Well, I never. Here's the thing: I never lift more than an hour. Yeah. 1 hour is my limit for lifting.
We go about hour 20 sometimes.
But the reason that I say 2 hours,
yeah,
the reason I say 2 hours of exercise is because I actually do cardio,
yeah,
as well. Unlike you.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. But here's the thing.
I'm probably never gonna go. This conversation will probably not inspire me to go run a marathon. Yeah,
but here's the thing though, is that, you know, I will say this though, in your defense, is that lifting weights does work your heart, because you'll get your heart rate up doing weightlifting.
Yeah, for sure.
So you know, you're getting a little bit of cardiovascular health from lifting as well.
Yeah.
So I'm for it. But my point is that, you know, I'm just breaking down a basic Monday through Friday, showing that people have time. And then Saturday, you can spend the whole day doing whatever. Sunday, you're going to church, doing whatever. I'm saying you can carve out the time and still sleep 8 hours a night.
Yeah.
And still have time with your family every single day.
I don't think that's the issue, though. I think the issue is when they say they don't have time to work out.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of they're either lazy.
But even just breaking down those numbers, I haven't even gotten into multitasking yet. Okay, now let me tell you how I multitask at the gym. And I don't know exactly how you lift, but when I lift, I take 3 minutes of break between each set.
Yeah, that's
that
what
way
do.
I can hit the set the hardest and give it everything.
That's what I do.
So I give it everything
we
and
we
then
basically,
3 minutes.
For the working sets, we take about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then if we hit a PR or something, and let's say, for example, when I hit 340 on the deadlift and I was going to shoot for 350, I took like a 5-minute rest.
Yeah, you take longer,
just
course.
A little longer, but no more than 3 minutes on average.
So when I go to the gym to lift heavy weights, the way that I do it is, you know, I do one body part per day per week. So I have chest day, back day, shoulder day, leg day, arm day. The only day I don't take 3 minutes is on arm day, because I rotate between triceps and biceps. So I do like a circuit training on that day. So I'm only waiting like a minute and a half between sets or whatever. Yeah. But on the other 4 days, like, I'll do 3-minute breaks between every working set. Mm-hmm. And during that 3 minutes, I read my Bible.
Yeah.
So that's like a devotional time for me. And so, you know, I'll usually get through at least like, you know, 3-4 chapters reading the Bible usually in another language, so it takes a little longer for me because I'm not reading it in English, so it slows me down a little bit. So right now, like, my gym Bible is Portuguese. So, like, I go to the gym, like, this morning. I lifted weights this morning at the hotel.
Yeah.
And I started in John chapter 11, and I got through chapter 15 in Portuguese just between sets. So I'll just lift heavy, and then you got 3 minutes to do nothing while you're waiting. And, you know, I know you guys are probably talking and fellowshipping, which is great, but I'm by myself when I lift, so I just read my Bible.
You're basically saying you can kill two birds with one stone,
and you can be
productive in between your heavy lifting.
A lot of people would bring up their commute as like, oh, well, you know, 8 hours of work, but what about the commute? Okay, but here's the thing about the commute. Let me give you two options.
You could listen to the Bible.
Two options for the commute, okay? Number one, if you drive on your commute, then you listen to the Bible. And then that's your devotion time. You could sing hymns. You could pray. You could listen to the Bible on audio.
You can learn a new language. You can do Pimsleur.
But I'm saying, like, you can easily combine those two things. But what I would strongly encourage, and I know this is not your thing, so you're going to tune me out right now. But basically what I would encourage is just quit driving to work. Just get to work on your own energy, whether that's walking. If it's close, you could walk. You could run if it's close or walk. Or you could ride a bike. Or whatever. So if you can get to work on your own steam.
I'm not against what you're saying, but the thing is, the church from the, or the gym and the church, or the building is like four cities away from where I live. So
well, then for you, it's an audio Bible.
Yeah.
Or whatever. For sure. I'm just saying, like,
you can do things on your way there.
You
can
never, the commute never has to be wasted.
Yeah.
Because either the commute can be a devotional time with the Lord. It could be an educational time where you're studying, or it could be physical training if there's a way. And obviously, some people don't have a shower at their job. You kind of need a shower in order to do it that way. But I would encourage people to just bike, run, walk, whatever. Get to work on your own steam if they have a shower.
Yeah.
And then, boom, you just killed two birds with one stone. Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, there's a way to work it in.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the same reason people say they don't have time to read their Bible.
Yeah.
You can work in the Bible reading. You can work in the exercise no matter what your situation.
I think at the end of the day, a lot of people will make those excuses not because they don't have enough time, but because they don't want to make time or they're lazy to do it. So they kind of – the easy way out is like, well, I can't work out. I don't have enough time to go work out.
Yeah.
I don't have enough time to do these things. I think at the end of the day, it's just laziness, a lack of motivation.
Or like, I got to spend time with my family.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Sometimes you can involve your family.
Yeah.
You know, if they're into it. Right. Now, if they're not into it, then find another way to multitask.
I will say this. In order to start a workout regime, whether that's running or lifting weights, you do have to have a level of commitment. There has to be a commitment
when you have to have goals.
Yeah, and you have to have commitment to those goals.
Yeah.
Like, you have to kind of be a self-starter. You know what I mean? Like, no one's going to get you out of bed. No one's going to tell you to go do it. No one's going to force you. Like, you have to make yourself go do it.
Well, good, because it builds discipline.
I'm just saying, you know, you have to basically be able to be disciplined and commit yourself to the process, to the program, in order to reach those goals.
So here's another point that I want to make about health and fitness and exercise. And again, you know, this might be something that you're not necessarily into.
Why are you bringing up all this stuff that I'm not into? Whose podcast is this anyways?
I'm a strong believer in what I would call environmental training.
Oh, okay. So what he's
training
talking
to the weather.
What? Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to talk about Earth Gym.
No. I mean, I like that too.
Yeah.
But no. I'm a strong believer in environmental training. So what I mean by that is that, like, I think that part of the reason why people are unhealthy today is because we're too climate controlled.
Yeah.
And so our bodies are designed not only to be physically active, working hard, but also our bodies are designed to go through seasons of, you know, summer and winter.
So for those of you who don't know, Pastor Anderson, he's really into if anybody knows him personally. Never stay at a hotel room with Pastor Anderson in the dead of summer of some other country, because he will turn up the heater on. So aside from the fact that it's like 115 degrees outside, he'll make sure that it's 115 degrees inside as well. This is what he's talking
about. Well, here's the thing. Like at my house in the summer, you know, I mean, I will literally like set up my office outside. Like I'll set up a table and a chair and just work outside for hours. I'll exercise outside in the summer. I'll go on bike rides, running.
I am intrigued with that. Like I when you mentioned that to me yesterday, because you're basically saying you have to adapt to the climate of that time. And obviously that's more, that's difficult here in California.
No, it isn't.
In California?
Because you have enough.
You can modify your environment.
You have enough variation here. This morning, you know, I looked at the weather this morning when I woke up in Santa Ana, California here. It's 46 degrees outside.
Yeah.
So if you go swimming in pools in Southern California, that water is going to be in the 50s.
Well,
and so you're going to get
the pool around here, like,
because the cold is more important than the heat. Like
you guys have pools over there. We don't have pools over there.
Yeah. Well, I'm for heat training, but the cold is even more important.
Yeah. Cold showers.
So what I do is like in the winter time in Arizona. I think Arizona is more ideal for this than Southern California. Because we have super hot summers, so I can get out and run in the heat, bike in the heat. Like run in the heat, bike in the heat, take walks in the heat, work outside. I just make a point to spend hours outside every day and just feel the heat. And then in the winter, you know, I'll basically go running in the mornings or at night. And just very lightly dressed. Like I don't wear a lot of clothes. So I'll just wear like just a pair of shorts and a t-shirt and just go running and it's like 35 or something.
Yeah.
Because the good thing about Arizona is that even though in the winter it'll still be like 70 degrees every day, even in the winter, at night it drops into the 30s and 40s. Yeah. And so you can get up early in the morning and, you know, I'll go on bike rides just with just maybe a light hoodie, if anything. Sometimes just a t-shirt, just shorts, and just really get exposed to the cold. I basically just spend a few hours a day feeling cold. Mm-hmm. Like I just want to feel cold a few hours a day all winter.
That's good.
And then like I'll also go swimming in pools.
Yeah.
Even in the winter, just year round. So, and then like you said, cold showers in the winter as well. So, you know, in the summer, I really acclimate to the heat. And in the winter, I really acclimate to the cold. And I'm telling you, it has made me feel so much healthier. Like, I've been getting sick less. Because I've had historically a really bad immune system.
What do you think the scientific reason for that is? Are the cameras good?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't necessarily base everything in my life on science.
I know, but I'm just saying, do you know of any research
Science is great and science has its place, but science can't really solve everything necessarily. And so a lot of my views on health and nutrition and exercise are more philosophical than scientific. And so they're just kind of based on my own ideas and my own experiences.
Yeah.
And today it's like, oh, yeah, science. You know, and people are like, they worship science. And science is great, but let's face it, science has kind of failed to answer a lot of questions about our health. If science is so great at health, then why in the age of science are people unhealthier than ever? You know, so some of this is not necessarily science-based. It's just based on philosophy and based on experience.
I think
so. For me, let me give you my philosophical answer. And I think there are some scientific studies out there that may or may not have backed this up.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest, I don't really care because if it works for me, it works.
Yeah.
If I started doing this environmental training over the last few years and I've gotten sick way less, I've been way healthier, I feel great.
Is there anything else you've changed other than that?
Well, not. I would say the biggest change I made in the year 2021 was I ramped up my environmental training of just being hotter in the summer and colder in the winter. And I got sick less in 2021 than any year of my life. And I'm just feeling great. And I feel like it really helped my immunity. And I think there is some science floating around out there somewhere about it. But here's my philosophy. My philosophy is that our bodies are designed to struggle. You know, we're designed to handle the heat, to handle the cold, to pick up heavy items, to walk all day, to work all day. You know, we're designed to work, like we talked about with exercise, but we're also designed to withstand the elements.
Yeah.
And I feel like because we've gotten so climate controlled, it's like our body doesn't really have anything to fight. And so then our body basically, like, in many ways, fights itself. Mm. It's sort of like if you have an external enemy, it really causes everybody to unite. Like, let's say the church was under attack, then the church would kind of band together and unite, right, against that common enemy. Whereas, like, let's say, you know, there's no enemy, then the church could just start fighting within.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a great example. It's sort of like when America gets under attack, like, America kind of unites, and it's not really about different factions.
So what you're
anymore.
Saying is creating an environment where you're constantly putting your body in a situation where it has to defend itself against the elements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then basically your body is fighting the elements.
Yeah.
And so your body's just getting stronger and your body's not fighting itself. Because a lot of people today, they have like autoimmune disorders where their body's like attacking itself, like allergies. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, like where their body like attacks their own cells and their own joints, like rheumatoid arthritis. Right. And I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical expert. I'm not an expert on the biology of it. But that's not really the point.
Well, I definitely want to experiment with this because it seems pretty. Even if it doesn't improve my immunity, just the fact that you can acclimate to the different elements, whether in summer or during the winter, I think it's just good for fortitude.
Well, it helps you lose weight anyway because it burns calories. Mm-hmm. If you're in the cold and your body has to heat you up.
It's shivering.
Yeah. I try to avoid shivering, though. Like, part of cold training for me is to withstand the urge to shiver. Mm. So, like, when I go in ice water, my body wants to shiver, and I fight that urge to like, breathe fast and shiver and stuff. The way to acclimate is you get into the cold water and you try to breathe normal, you try to relax into it, and you try not to shiver is the best way to do it. But obviously, yeah, shivering would burn calories too. But I'm just saying, like, you want your body to rely on something other than shivering.
Yeah.
Because shivering is not really the best way to get warm, but it's what our body goes to. Like, it's the go-to warm-up mechanism. So it's better to withstand the shivering, and then your body will find other ways to warm you up from the inside. And obviously, that's burning calories anyway. And it just builds mental toughness, makes you a little bit just able to handle heat and cold so that, you know, you can be out in there in the summer doing stuff and out there in the winter doing stuff and not just be like you have to have the climate a certain way all the time. And like I said, I think it builds your immunity as well. I've found that to be the case in my own life. I think there is probably some science floating out there.
Well, I guess it's time to experiment a little bit, you know? Because this year I got sick quite a bit with the Rona and all that. But we'll see for next year.
Yeah, I'm gonna try it. And, you know, like I don't take cold showers in the summer. You know, it's like you take cold showers in the winter.
Yeah.
Or
you take hot showers in the summer?
No. I mean, in the summer, you know, I just try to exercise outside as much as I can. Now, some people might think, like, how is that even possible to run when it's 115 outside or to bike? And the key to doing it is to stay wet. So what I'll do is, like, I will jump in the pool with my clothes on and then run. Mm. And then I've got those wet clothes, and it's like a swamp cooler kind of. And after about 30 to 40 minutes, it'll be dry as a bone. Your clothes will be just dry in like a half hour. So I'll go on bike rides in the summer. I just douse myself in water, and then 30, 40 minutes of riding later, I'm dry as a bone. Then I find somebody who has the sprinklers on, and I get in the sprinklers. Or if I can't, you know.
Honey, there goes that pastor again playing in our sprinklers.
So, well, I'm not talking about residential. I mean like commercial. I mean like commercial properties will have sprinklers or something. So I'll get in the sprinklers or whatever. I'll try to find bodies of water I can get in. Just to get drenched.
Yeah.
Or if I can't find any of that, I'll just literally just go to the gas station, buy a bottle of water, and just dump it all over myself and just do that and just keep going. One time, I kid you not, I ran 13 miles in my neighborhood. I had this 1.3 mile loop, and every 1.3 miles, I would jump in the pool And it was 110 outside. And I went 13 miles just by dipping every 1.3 miles. Jump in the pool, keep running. Jump in the pool, keep running. And I just kept going, And so that's the secret in the summer. And then, you know, after you do it a lot, you can kind of get to a level where you don't even necessarily need to get that wet. Where, where like you start just getting used to it to where like you only have to get wet when it gets really hot or if the workout's really long. But your body adapts fast. And you know, what's interesting with the cold training, you will adapt super fast. Like this isn't something where you have to wait months for results. Like if you wanted to try this, you'll have results in 1 week. I guarantee it.
Really?
1 week.
What do you mean by results?
Here's what I mean.
Are you saying I would be able to withstand?
Yeah, cold water.
Within a week.
Let me give you an example. When I first started doing this a few years ago, the first time I went into a cold swimming pool, it was like 52 degrees of the water on a little thermometer. So it was like 52 degree water. I went in there, and after 2 minutes, I had to get out. Like, I was so cold that I was like, I got to get out of here now, right? But after 1 week of doing that every day, I could stay in for 10 minutes, no problem.
Well, let me ask you.
No problem.
When you go into the pool, are you swimming or just kind of just staying still?
Well, as a start, to start, you just kind of hang out. You just and I would just dip my head underwater like every minute and just stay in up to my neck for 10 minutes. But as you get more advanced, yeah, sometimes I'll get in the pool and swim around and stuff.
Well,
it's not a workout, though.
I'm just saying that because, like, obviously, if you jump in a pool that's 50 degrees and you start swimming, you're going to warm up.
No, you just hang out.
Okay.
If I did swim around, I'd swim very slowly. Mm-hmm. So it's not a workout. It's more just a chill, no pun intended. You just kind of chill in the water. But the thing is, I'm telling you, like, after a week, you're adapted. Hmm. And then literally, I did it one winter, and then, like, I didn't do any cold training the whole spring, summer, fall. Next winter, it was like the adaptation was still there. Hmm. You just get right back into it, and you haven't lost hardly anything. So what I'm saying is you get results really fast. Now, a word of caution, though, is that, you know, if you go into ice water for a long time, you'll die. Like it doesn't take long to kill you, in fact. So like if you go into like ice water, after 15 minutes, you could start getting hypothermia if you're not trained. So that's why I would recommend people just limit themselves to 10 minutes, especially in the beginning. You know what I mean? Like don't go beyond 10 minutes. And obviously 52 degree water is not the same as like in the 30s.
Yeah.
If you get in water that's in the 30s, and you're in it for 15 minutes, you could get hypothermia. Wow. And also, after about a half hour, you might die in ice water. But if you build up to it, then you could be in that 30-some degree water for an extended period. But still, just for safety, I would just recommend people just kind of just limit yourself to 10 minutes, especially if you're in the 30s.
Yeah.
Because some people live in Arizona, the water only gets down to about 50 degrees. But when I go to other parts of the country, I'll take advantage of those cold places. So I've been able to swim in some icy rivers and in other places and do some cold plunges. But like you gotta be aware though that it's not just about, hey, look how tough I am, because you can literally die if you don't do it right.
Right.
So, you know, limit yourself to 10 minutes. And then the other thing I would recommend is just when you get out, don't warm up too fast either if you're a beginner. Because that can be very painful and it could also be harmful. Hmm. So usually what I do is, you know, I'll spend 10 minutes in the water and then I'll get out and I won't even dry off right away. I'll just kind of hang out in the cold air for a few minutes and let my body slowly. So I'll kind of just hang out for a couple minutes and then I'll dry off, hang out for a couple more minutes. Then I go in the house and put on warm clothes and you know, get my body temperature back.
But the only thing I do,
because I do want to try it. I want to try that.
Yeah.
Or the 10 minute walks, we could do that. 20 minute walks. But
20,
he's not.
20
he's
minutes like, in the 90 degrees isn't. That's not going to cut it.
He's not for that. That's like me lifting his deadlift. You know what I mean? Like that's not really going to cut it. It's like, come on. Can we do some? Can we do actually something challenging here? This lightweight. You know. So maybe we'll start. Maybe we'll start running. Maybe. I just want to try it though. I do want to try that. That sounds pretty interesting. I want to see if it affects me for the sixth season coming in 2022 or something. You know, we'll see if it actually works. So
I mean, it worked for me.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
You know?
Either way, I mean, let's say it doesn't help my immunity, it's still good for fortitude reasons.
Yeah.
You know, to just make you stronger, withstand the elements.
It may be a coincidence.
Put your body in a position where it's uncomfortable. But it's always good to do that.
I feel like it's helped me a lot. And yeah. I just
Do you
I
know
feel
anybody else who they've tried that and it's helped their immunity?
I mean, I don't know anybody personally who does this to themselves,
this
except my son.
Sound very valid. I don't know.
My son Solomon, he's into it. Like,
I don't know how much credibility this has here.
My son Solomon, he does all the cold training and stuff the same
and
way.
And it's helped his immunity and all that?
I mean, he's always had great immunity. Oh, okay. So. You know, he grew up just he's got great genetics, and he just grew up eating healthy and being physically active, and you know, yeah. So he's got a lot going for him, obviously. For sure.
Well, I will definitely try that. That's pretty awesome. Sounds very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, another thing that I believe in philosophically is every single day I like to do something that I don't want to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just mm-hmm. every day I just force myself to do something that I don't want to do.
Yeah. Take yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Just
take something hard.
Just don't always take the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
You know, so I typically like to every morning pick a task that I've been dreading and just kind of get it out of the way.
Yeah.
So I hope that this podcast has helped people just maybe think about making some changes to improve their health a little bit. Or
absolutely.
Start some kind of exercise. And here's the thing. If you're not into I do think that the best place to start is lifting. Like if you're only gonna exercise one thing, I would say lifting.
Yeah.
Is the most important. But if you're not into lifting, no problem, because there's running, there's swimming. I swim laps almost every week. I run every week. I lift weights. I bike.
Or you can get into martial arts. You can get into boxing, Muay Thai, kickboxing. Or if you don't like striking, you can get into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, which is really good on the body.
Just find anything you like.
Something to make you do something physical, to exert your body in some way, fashion, or form. You know, it's just you need to do something with your body.
And I'm not one of these people that says, like, oh, you got to do this workout and don't do that workout. Because to me, the workout that works is the one that you do.
Yeah.
So if you like doing it, you know, then great. I mean, except there's a few things that I would just say right now that I'm just against, which is using the machines at the gym are a big no-no. Like, do not use the machines at the gym. Like, I'm just against that right away. Like that
isolating muscles.
That is not a real workout. Like, don't do isolation exercises and don't use the machines, I would say. Like, that's a hard and fast thing for me.
Yeah. Machines, for people who don't know, the machines will isolate a muscle. It's more so for body composition than anything else. Whereas the heavy lifting, such as the big three, they're more so for getting strong.
Well, you have to use free weights.
Yeah,
free weights. Or body weight exercise. I'm all for body weight exercise. Pull-ups, push-ups, sit-ups.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Free weights, dumbbells.
Burpees, whatever. Yeah, free weights, dumbbells is what you need to be using. But, like, the machines are dangerous. They're harmful. You don't build muscle. Like you feel like, oh, I'm working so hard. I'm building so much muscle. They don't work the stabilizing muscles. And if you're not working the stabilizing muscles.
Like the leg press, for example. The leg press is not a good
thing. The leg press is hazardous.
Yeah.
The leg press is dangerous.
Which is funny because people will say like deadlifting is really bad for your lower back, but it's actually like the leg press is
really bad. When I was 12 years old, we had a leg press at our school, a leg press machine. And we would load up like 400 pounds on the leg press. And I was like the skinny kid, and I'm just like leg pressing 400 pounds. because it's not real. It's not a real workout. Like, you're not really, you can't lift 400 pounds. But with the leg press, you can.
Yeah.
Dude, I'll get on the leg press. I'm just piling up hundreds. You just keep adding hundreds of more pounds. And you just keep being able to lift it. But then you go over to the squat rack and you've made zero gains.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It does not translate.
Yeah.
One time I experimented one time. I spent like 5 or 6 weeks using the leg press. And then I went to the squat rack. I hadn't even gained an ounce on the squat rack.
Yeah.
Like, the leg press is a joke and it's dangerous for your back because you're lifting these insane amounts.
Whereas, like, for example, like, I've noticed that my deadlift has gotten stronger only because my squat has gotten stronger. Like, my squats have helped my deadlift. tremendously.
And those vice things versa. All transfer because you're actually building real strength.
Yeah.
Whereas this fake strength that you build, and the worst machines are like the bench press machine, the military press machine. Those machines are horrible. Like, you just grab the dumbbells and do it the real way.
You talk about like the Smith machine?
Yeah, or the pec deck or whatever.
Well, the Smith machine is really bad even for like deadlifts and squats because what did you say, Ulysses? Like, it kind of messes up your form, right?
Yeah.
It only moves in one manner.
It's these real unnatural movements. Yeah. You can get injured. It's unnatural. You're not going to make gains. Look, if I go to the gym, I don't want to waste my time spinning my wheels. So FIDI not as one that beateth the air.
Yeah. Not as one that useth the leg press.
I'm just saying, like, using the machines at the gym, and people gravitate to the machines because they're easy, but, like, you might as well not even go to the gym if you're going to use
so
machines,
gain,
in my opinion.
So I make gains not as one that does the leg press.
I'm just saying, like, I don't even go to the gym if you're going to use the machines. Like, it's free weights or die. Okay, so I do want to say that. But other than that, do whatever you want. Do whatever you like. And another thing I hate, treadmills. They make no sense. Like, the
Amen.
Whole world.
Yeah.
Like, but hold on a second. Why would you run on a treadmill when you could just go outside and run?
Okay, see, now
we're... And here's people's excuse. Yeah, they drive around the parking lot trying to find the closest parking spot so that they can get on a treadmill. But here's the thing, too, about the treadmill. People's excuse for using the treadmill is like, well, what about when it's too hot? What about when it's too cold? Okay, back up this recording 20 minutes. If it's cold or hot, that's just better training.
Yeah.
No treadmill. I would rather run in place.
Hey, I'm all for
than
you.
To run on a treadmill.
Yeah, amen.
Jump no rope. Running. Jump rope, yes. Treadmill, no.
You don't have to worry about me getting on a treadmill.
It makes no sense.
Exactly. I agree. All right. 100%.
I'm not as against the treadmill as I am against the machines, the weight machines.
Yeah.
But treadmills to me are just boring anyway. Yeah. But, yeah.
I agree. And you don't take any supplements. You don't do any pre-workout.
No.
You don't take any. What was
the most
that?
Radical thing I take is a multivitamin. I told you one time I did some doping before a workout.
You
which
went
was,
to go get some Starbucks?
I drank a caramel frappuccino from Starbucks. That was like the most radical doping I've ever done.
You don't do. Pre-workout or no. creatine or
nope.
anything of that nature?
Never.
You're all natty.
Just food, water, and a multivitamin.
He doesn't he doesn't even use shoes when he runs. Can you believe that?
But I've
he's all then, natty. I mean, we're talking about natty. He uses his feet.
Sometimes I'll do like an organic, like all natural organic protein powder that's from like pea protein or whey or something.
Pastor Anderson's kind of boring.
But it's all like,
he's a boring. He could be a Mormon when it comes to like these matters. And if ever I go on a trip with Pastor Anderson, I make sure I don't go to his cabin because
there's
no junk food allowed. We went to a pastor's retreat and we went to the grocery store to go get some stuff. And I was getting like Swiss rolls, stuff that I typically don't eat. But it's like we're partying. He's like, we're not getting this. He wanted to get like vegetables and all these. It's the Joseph Smith cabin. You know what I mean? No sodas, no nothing.
Yeah, no cat. There's no Cokes.
No
coffee.
Candy, no nothing. So just for future reference, anybody who you know, so he's very much he takes the natty approach to another level. So
yep.
So it's an unrealistic goal for a lot of people, but you know. Well, Pastor Anderson, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, man.
A lot of great information, folks. I hope it inspires you and motivates you to, number one, start exercising in some form or manner, whether that's powerlifting or running or swimming or doing martial arts, changing up your diet, maybe testing out some fasting, maybe changing out, you know, trying out this climate change type of a workout. Not workout, but just, you know, training yourself.
I like that. The climate change workout.
Climate change training. Or adapting to the climate, whether it's heat or it's cold, and just recognizing that all these things at the end of the day, whatever it is that you do, is to make you a better servant of God, to help you to be a better tool for the Lord to use, a better vessel and to honor meat for the master's use. And not bad to have short-term goals, But at the end of the day, we do this to obtain an incorruptible crown. And so, Pastor Anderson, thank you again for being here. Hope you have a safe trip back home. Folks, thank you for watching. Make sure you watch the episodes, of course, on YouTube. These will be on audio on Spotify as well. And we're looking forward to seeing you all on the next episode. God bless and have a great evening.